What's up, rabid listeners? Michelle here. Starting on September 1st, we are changing up the model for Mushing Magazine and this podcast. We're offering a one-size-fits-all bundle. It's called Mushing Plus. You will get ad-free episodes, bonus content, all kinds of stuff. You guys listen to tons of podcasts. You know how these things go. There will be a link in the show description. It's $5 a month, which is just 15 cents a day, and that gets you ad-free and bonus content. It helps Mushing stay independent and non-reliant on ad sales, and you will also receive the print magazine delivered right to your mailbox anywhere in the world. The print magazine isn't going anywhere. But before we go any further, we know you are probably conditioned to think that this is only a print magazine and that's what you're paying for. Nope. If you have been following us on social media over the last couple of years, you've likely heard us talk about it. The Mushing Plus program is not just the print magazine. It's everything. It's also a way for you, our readers, listeners, and fans, to support the Mushing community and one, if not the only, full-time Mushing media outlet in the world. It's $5 a month, less than one pint of beer at your local bar or a morning brew if you are a coffee snob like me. Yeah, we know your money could go to a lot of things, but you pay for that Netflix subscription, right? And you're a member of the local Mushing club that costs $40 a year and only does a couple of races when there is snow. The money goes straight to us and helps keep us afloat. We've heard your concerns about maintaining the print version of the magazine and the number of ads on our podcasts, and now you'll have a chance to take action. We know that the future of publishing is not print. It's digital. This is not going to change. I bet your local community paper went digital a long time ago. Not us. We are still here. The first piece of bonus content will be a conversation between Robert and I talking about how all of this works. There's also an ongoing Ask Us Anything portion of the $5 tier that allows listeners to communicate, and we'll jump in there whenever we have time to answer questions on special bonus episodes. I'll keep bothering you about this so you guys don't have to remember, but get excited about it, okay?
Nobody covers dog sledding like Mushing from First Paw Media. Our team of athletes, volunteers, race organizers, and mushers like Robert and Michelle Forto brings you closer to this sport. If it's happening, we are there. Live from the qualifying races in January and February, the Iditarod in March, and in the summer, Mushing takes you on the road with our team and trail tour. We connect you with the history of this sport, in-depth interviews with the top mushers, and great storytelling and breaking news all year long. Follow on Mushing.com.
Hello and welcome to Mushing. This is Robert Forto, and today I am joined by Dr. Erica Bowling. She is calling in from Maine, and we are discussing one of the articles that she published in the latest issue of Mushing Magazine. Check it out. Erica, thanks for joining us today. How are things up in your neck of the woods?
Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's great here. It's we're actually kind of in warmer weather right now, and I'm kind of I'm not a hot weather person, so I'm kind of waiting for some cooler weather so I can get out and do a little bit more endurance running and training.
I'm looking forward to this. We're calling Erica. She is up in Maine, beautiful part of the country. If you're listening to us outside of the U.S., definitely check this spot of the country out. It is a very cool place. So guys that are listening, we're doing something pretty cool here. We're going to do a little bit of a behind the scenes episode with Erica. She wrote an article in issue 201, our summer issue of Mushing Magazine, and it is titled Beyond the Trail: Why Your Exercise Recovery Plan Matters. And I'm excited to jump into this. Erica, I know in the intro we talked about who you are and what you're all about, but why are we talking about this particular topic in this issue of Mushing?
Good question. So, a big reason why this was kind of a hot topic that I felt like wasn't so important is, I have our online canine fitness programs. We have our Elite Canine Athlete program and our Certified Canine Athlete Specialist program, where we teach people how to build fitness programs for dogs. And I would say almost 100% of the time, when people are wanting to improve their dogs' training, they want to improve their stamina, they want to improve their performance and their endurance. They immediately think about, what exercises do I do? How long should I run? How many days per week? And sometimes, and it can be frequently, there are things that people can be doing completely separate from the training and the exercises that can make a huge difference in improving the dog's performance, improving their stamina, their endurance, help them, bounce back faster. And it's in sometimes small little things that we can sometimes immediately change that could have a significant difference. And that comes around recovery. And I think one of the reasons why this kind of stands out to me is very personal is I have a Belgian Malinois, working lines, very high drive. I've done protection sports with him, and he would he's super like sensitive to the heat. He would just work really hard, super intense. In the summertime, when we would train, it would take him forever to just kind of cool off and bring that heart rate down. And you're training, you're conditioning, you're preparing, but I found that small things that I changed, like when I fed him, what I did for recovery, how I managed hydration. I made a few small little changes into those types of things, not the actual how many days per week were we training, or how many, how long was the session, or how many repetitions. It was those little things, but they're not so little, that made a significant impact. And, I changed, exercise recovery. I made sure I had a supplementation when I gave him the supplementation. I changed his diet. He wasn't, we wanted a higher performance food. And even my trainer was like, wow, like he's recovering so much faster. He's lasting longer. He has better stamina. And so that's why I felt like it's such an important topic, because it just seems like when we aren't getting the performance that we want, or we think we're doing everything right and we're not getting the results, many, many times we think it's in the actual, like the action of the training or the exercises or the amount of training when we're doing, when sometimes it's revisiting what we're doing in the pre-exercise, during and post-exercise recovery that can make a world of difference.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack here, Erica. Right off the top in your article, you talk about recovery isn't just rest, it's strategy. And I think that's a big component of this. And you sort of break down the article based on that. And unlike humans, dogs cannot tell us, hey, this was too much, this was too hard, this was too long. They can show it to us a little bit. They can, come up lame or be injured or whatever, but they don't give us that feedback, at least the way that we understand feedback, to know what they need in recovery, if you know what I mean, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I wanted to specifically structure it. It's not just, recovering what you do after exercise, because what you're doing beforehand plays a big role on how well your dog does recover and bounce back after. And I started here with the very first number one, where I talked about hydration and pre-hydration, is because a lot of times people think about hydration as, giving them the hydration in the water and making sure they're getting what they need, like after exercise. And what really kind of caught my eye, and again, on a personal level with the prehydration, is I have a senior dog now, and he had a little bit of arthritis in his shoulder. And he, for years, as he's been getting older, we've just had this, sporadic lameness that started progressing more and more as he got older and older. And one of the things that I started doing research, and I started looking at the relationship in human research and also some stuff with dogs, but a lot also in the humans, is the relationship between hydration, dehydration, inflammation, and pain. And I said, you know what? I'm really gonna, I was letting him just kind of drink, act free access to water all the time. But I was like, let's see if I can try to like make him drink more and just really, really start focusing on hydration and having really, really good hydration. And I didn't change anything to his diet. I didn't, I actually stopped giving him, he had some medication for some pain when he would have, the limping with his arthritis. And I noticed a significant difference when I really started boosting up and kind of getting more water into him. And so for here, it wasn't just so much of replenishing, the nutrients and the water that you're losing through the exercise, but also that relationship between having good joints, and not being achy and decreasing inflammation. And, whether it's an older dog or a dog that maybe have some health issues or, the aches and pains and wear and tear that comes on the body with exercise. And even like myself, I know that I personally, I don't drink enough water. And I know, like, I think I, most humans, I think a lot of us, we're in a constant state of a little bit of, dehydration. And when you look at the research, even just the tiniest bit of being dehydrated, in humans, like you can drastically see a reduction in your performance. And they have all kinds of research on this with runners. Like, it doesn't take a lot of just not having enough, not being well hydrated, and your running can greatly suffer. And so it makes sense for the dogs, that we need to, be on top of this. And it's not just, oh, we exercise and make sure we give them water after exercise. But if they're coming into the exercise and they're not like at their peak, that could, you could see a decrease of 10%, 15%, more in their performance. And again, these are things people might not be thinking about whenever they're not getting the kind of outcomes that they're wanting or expecting from their training.
And I know that you do not add a lot of other products, as you mentioned, Erica. But can you give us a tip, a trick? Because we expect our dogs to drink when they're thirsty, but that may not be the case. So, do you have a tip that you may not have listed in your article to get your kind of high caliber working dog to drink what they should be drinking?
Yeah, I know a lot of people, they'll do just something that they'll put to kind of bait in the water, bait the water to make it more appealing. A lot of people will try to put something in there that might be have a little bit of flavor, or have a little bit of a broth, or they might have something that's gonna change the flavor of the water. I found for my dog that really that didn't do too much. But if I did something like if there were blueberries floating in the water, then he's like, "Ooh, I want those blueberries." Or if I had something, I put like a tiny bit of yogurt and two little spoonfuls of yogurt, and it's at the bottom of the water. Like that gets him really excited. So I find for my dog sometimes if I put something that that's edible and healthy, and he has something that he sees kind of floating in there, and it's not, I think sometimes it's not necessarily changing the taste or the flavor, but he sees that something in there and he wants to get at it. And so I found for my dog, doing things like putting a little bit of yogurt in there, or I noticed one time I put a little some vegetables in there and they're floating or they sink to the bottom. He'll drink all that water up to try to get to, those blueberries at the bottom. And so I find that, some people, you just kind of have to see what works for some dogs. It doesn't take much at all. Some dogs, it might be like, hey, the blueberries work today, and 2 weeks from now, it doesn't work anymore, and you have to find other ways. There was this interesting It was a TikTok video on social media, and the dog wouldn't eat its food, and the owner was like pretending to put something in it. And it was just the simple act of pretending like you're making something special. And she just, took a spoon and hid it on the side of the table just to make it seem like, oh, look, I'm preparing. And the dog was like, ah, ravenous, wanted to eat it. So I thought that was pretty funny, because I've definitely have, I have seen dogs like that where it's like they think you're doing something to make it more appealing. And this dog, she did nothing to the food. She just pretended like she made something special out of it, and it got the dog to eat it.
I love that. It's fun to play those games, if you will, with your dogs, trying to figure out what is next. Erica, we have a couple of more tips here that you listed in your article. Your second one was sleep, and you say it's the forgotten recovery tool. And I know on a human perspective, this is a big deal in terms of recovery, not just for athletics or performance, but just in your day-to-day. If you do not get enough sleep, it can really hinder your day. I guess my main question, and we won't spend too much on this because I think it's sort of self-explanatory, if you will, but how in the world can you help a dog sleep? That seems like a losing battle, if you will. You don't use crates and things like that. You can't tell your dog, okay, Max, time to go to bed, like you do your 2-year-old. But at some point, they have to get that rest because they don't know that they're going to go run, 5 miles tomorrow like we do.
That's a great point. I think a lot of times it's being more aware of their environment. And a lot's going to depend if you have a house dog, a kennel dog, and things like that. But I did look at research in this, and it was really interesting that we do have a good bit of research on this from things like, it affecting dogs' recovery time, performance. They also looked at things like behavior issues, if the dogs weren't getting enough sleep. And so one of the things that I realized, like I don't sleep a lot myself. And when I was reading the research, I saw that like if my dog slept based on how I sleep, he would be greatly sleep deprived. And he's a house dog. He lives in the house with me, and he'll be in the bedroom with me when I sleep at night. So that made me aware that, if he's just sleeping when I'm sleeping, that's not enough for him. And also with older dogs, I have an older dog, and research does show with the older dogs, they do tend to nap a lot more. And so when I started digging into the research, I started being more aware of my movements and all the times that I disrupt my dog's sleeping, especially like I work from home and I have a home, a home office and things like that. And so I'll do things like just being more aware of the environment. I also notice when it's warmer, say in the bedroom, I notice my dog, like if he's a little bit hot, like he wakes up earlier, he gets restless, he's not comfortable. I notice that if it's much cooler in the house, he sleeps better. And then even like I'll have people that'll call me at night, and I'll have him on on the phone, and my phone rings, and if he's sleeping and he hears it, he jumps up and wakes up. And the other night he was in sound asleep and just a really good nap. And he's almost 13 years old, and I want him to be healthy. And so my friend was going to call me on a video call, and I said, hold on, wait a minute. I'm just going to put my earbuds in because he won't wake up when I'm talking. But if he hears the ringing, he jumps up and will just leap up from his sleep. So those types of things I'm being more conscious of. And since I was digging into the research, and also I have a senior dog, and he does sleep more. And so I do find that I am paying more attention to his environment, and I am more aware of like the things that I'm doing, or the environment, the temperature, the day-to-day structure of, are there moments where maybe I can be not as disruptive? Because I find probably for him, one of the biggest challenges for him to get his sleep is I'm interrupting him and I'm interrupting a lot of his sleep.
Yeah, it's so important, and how you can figure out to monitor that with your dog, I think is a very big deal. Number three is about post-training recovery, and that's what a lot of people think about when they think about recovery, as you mentioned at the top of the episode here. And here you talk about post-exercise hydration and nutrition and massage and body checks and all that sort of stuff. Mushers particularly, would know all about these sorts of things, about how important massages are at checkpoints and that sort of thing. But you also talk about recovery monitoring and tracking. And of course, there's a whole bunch of tech out there these days where you can do that, whether it be GPS monitors or, you know, things like Fitbits for dogs and all of this other stuff. Do you use any of that stuff, or do you take a different route? And if you do use some type of tech, what is it?
Yeah, I actually have a Garmin watch that I use, you know, that I wear, and we do a lot of like dry land stuff. You know, we'll go out running together and doing things outdoors. So that I always wear my watch, so I can always see the distance, the amount of time. You know, I'm tracking my intensity level. I don't have a monitor directly on him. Typically, it's just me, but I do track that, and I'm like, even my senior dog. You know, I would know like what he's accustomed to as far as the workout that he does and how far are we going. And if I'm going to increase it, I don't want to do it too much. So I'm very aware of when I'm wearing the Garmin and doing stuff with them, as far as the amount of time that I'm doing activities and the amount of activity, the length of time. And then also the key thing here, I think a lot with monitoring, is how quickly are they recovering and how quickly do they bounce back? Because that tells you a lot. It can, if you see distinct changes, it could be a sign of overtraining. If your dog suddenly, you're training a lot and they're just taking longer, you know, for the heart rate to get back down, it's taking them longer to cool off. They're just not, you know, kind of coming back as strong and they're needing more time. That looking closely at when you finish that, say, that intense exercise, and monitoring how frequently you're training, how frequently are you doing the rest and recovery, and then also paying attention to how much time it takes your dog after they're working really hard to get back to kind of that resting state. And when I was training, he's retired now, but when I was training hard, like in protection sports, like I knew that if it's a hot day out, we're training hard, it's outside, I know that when he's really fit, maybe within about 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes, I can get him back to his body temperature comes down. He's not breathing as hard. You know, he's getting back to kind of that regular kind of resting state beforehand. I noticed that in the beginning of the season in springtime, when he's not as fit and we're just starting our training, I would notice sometimes it when he was training really hard, and if it was pretty warm outside, sometimes it would take me 30 minutes. And I'd be like, wow, you know, it's really take, you know, 30 minutes, taking me a long time to bring him back to that kind of resting state. And then by the end of the season, when he was really fit, he was recovering a lot more quickly. And those similar situations, I may be able to knock off, you know, instead of 30 minutes, I might see within 15 minutes. And so I did, I would kind of keep track of that and pay attention to that post-exercise recovery. What was his condition like? How long was it taking him to bounce back? And, you know, having my calendar and knowing typically how many days per week is he used to training. And then if I was doing, if I was overloading him a bit more, like normally we would have a decoy and do club training maybe once a week. And I would go to a seminar, and let's say at that seminar, I now have a decoy and I have a trainer and we're now working really hard 3 days in a row. So I would know his body was not conditioned for that intense activity 3 days in a row. And so I would monitor and knew what my schedule was like, and I would adjust that. And on day two and day three, I you know, wouldn't work him as hard because I could see signs that he just wasn't recovering and bouncing back as quickly. So I pay attention to things from, you know, whether it's, you know, how far are we, you know, traveling that day out in the park, to, you know, if it's a warm day outside, how long is it taking his heart rate, his breathing, you know, that respiration to kind of get back to normal. And sometimes I do look at the watch and I will be, you know, tracking it really closely. But even if I'm not, you know, documenting every minute, I'm always very conscious, you know, just conscious of that and paying attention to those types of things with him bouncing back, whether it's after a particular exercise or what does it look like when we're doing a series of days in a row.
So in your last segment here, you close the loop. Erica, can you give us a 15-second elevator / soundbite that brings all of this together?
Yo, you got me on that one. So I would say that definitely, recovery is a very important thing that we have to consider in our training. But I would say the next time that you think that your training is off or you need to adjust the training or your dog's, your training might not be right for the performance that you're trying to get from your dog, before you go and start changing what you're doing, changing exercises, adding more days, taking off, fewer days. Look at your recovery. Look at what are you doing for recovery? What are you doing to prepare, before exercise, during and after? And before you make any big significant changes to the actual activities that you're doing, is there something that might be able to be tweaked in that recovery process that might be the explanation for why you aren't getting the results that you're wanting or needing?
So, Erica, to end here, hopefully you will do our Q&A that we ask all of our guests, and I can send you a link over to that. But I have to ask the one question that everybody always wants to know: is there anything that you're always carrying with you out on a run, a training trail? What is that one piece of tech or gear that you always have with you other than your cell phone?
I was getting ready to say so. Cell phone. Let me think. I always have I have my backpack with me, and I go in Acadia National Park a lot, and I'll have things. I make sure my phone is charged. I usually have something in there, like an emergency, like a whistle. I have something for if there's a change in the weather. And even if I only go out for a short distance, like I always throw that backpack on. And I have a background. Many years ago, I did search and rescue. So in the back of my mind, I guess, doing search and rescue and training in search and rescue, I always think about like worst case scenario of what can happen. And I like to pre be prepared. And then I also, I always, I don't always keep it on me. I should probably have it in my backpack, but I always make sure that I also have a muzzle in the car and have a first aid kit in the car. Like I said, I should probably have something in the backpack, but there's always a lot of people around where I'm at. But I'm always thinking about like if there's my dog's if a stranger came up and had to manhandle them, they would be like, what are you doing? And so, I'm always thinking about if there's an emergency or I need help or if my dog's injured, having a muzzle there so that if, somebody, if I'm injured and somebody has to handle my dog and move him physically, those are kind of the things that I always have in my car and also my backpack with kind of a few essential items and a charged cell phone. So if there's an emergency, you can always, reach out for help or use satellite.
All right, guys, Dr. Erica Bowling, check out her, I guess it's continuing features in Mushing Magazine now. Definitely check her out in issues number 200 and 201. Erica, it's been a pleasure. We'll talk again soon, okay?
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. On behalf of our guests today and our listeners, we'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports. Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.